New York's story begins in 1609, when the British explorer Henry Hudson, hired by the Dutch to find a northeast trade route to Asia, first sailed into the harbor at the tip of Manhattan and up the river that now bears his name. His discovery helped fuel the Netherlands' trade ambitions in the New World. In 1621, businessmen in the Netherlands founded the Dutch West India Company. It was a private firm that was granted a trade monopoly on lands wherever the Dutch Empire settled. The aim was to disrupt Spanish trade and the commerce of other rival colonial empires. In The Island at the Center of the World, author Russell Shorto says that is why the Dutch West India Company bought Manhattan Island from the Indians in 1624, built a fort, and began to settle a colony it called New Amsterdam.
They saw this colony originally as a base to prosecute the war in the Atlantic against Spain. As they began to lay out the colony, they had the idea to use it to exploit beavers and to grow tobacco. That's how they thought they were going to make money, which was a very good formula for building up an empire in a short period of time.
Shorto says that the 17th century Netherlands had an unusually diverse population for the time.
This was the great age of religious warfare. A lot of people were displaced, and a lot of people from other parts of Europe wound up there. They are, of course, the Low Countries. Because it's flat, it's easy to flee there. So, in the writings of European travelers who visit, who go to the Dam, the central square in Amsterdam in the 17th century, they marvel at seeing people with turbans, people with dark skin. Mm-hmm. The Dutch Republic made this diversity work for them, and they did it by fashioning a policy called tolerance. And this tolerance wasn't a grand, let's embrace everyone. It was a way to put up with different people.
Shorto adds that the Dutch were also helping to establish the rudiments of modern-day capitalism with the concept of stock shares, for example.
Instead of putting all your money in one ship and then it sinks, you put 1/50th of your money in 50 different ships, and then you stand a good chance of making a return. On a street called the Dam Rock in Amsterdam was where the first stock shares were traded. And then they built a stock market. So these two things, capitalism and tolerance, they developed. And this society happens to have been the one that planted a colony on this island called Manhattan.
Unlike genteel old Amsterdam, New Amsterdam was a rough place where pirates, smugglers, prostitutes, and taverns did brisk business alongside more legitimate trade. At one point, a quarter of Manhattan's buildings either produced or sold alcohol. Diversity also increased. By 1644, there were 18 languages spoken among the colony's 500 inhabitants. But Shorto says that peg-legged Peter Stuyvesant, who became the island's stern and despotic director in 1647, loathed all that messy, grasping human variety.
He befriended the governors of the English colonies, and he wrote to them that he envied them their pure societies, and he complained that his was made up of the scrapings of all nations. And Stuyvesant, in the case of the Jews who came here, and Quakers, tried to bar them. And both times, they appealed over his head to the powers in the home country, and both times, he was overruled.
The Quakers settled the village of Vlissingen, which became Flushing, in New York City's present-day borough of Queens. In 1657, 30 of them signed what came to be called the Flushing Remonstrance. It petitioned Stuyvesant to retract his ban on worship outside the Dutch Reformed Church. Although he refused and jailed and fined several signers, the Dutch West India Company eventually told him, quote, to shut his eyes and allow everyone to have his own belief. Shorto considers the Flushing Remonstrance one of the founding documents of American religious freedom. And while the Dutch West India Company ceded New Amsterdam to the British in 1667, Shorto says the colony's tradition of cultural and religious tolerance had a profound impact on how the United States would be governed after the Revolutionary War against the British in the late 1770s and early 1780s.
New Yorkers were the ones who insisted on a Bill of Rights being attached to the Constitution, individual rights. And that relates because when the English first took over from the Dutch had enjoyed a greater slate of rights than British colonies did. And this is what they asked for in the surrender terms, and they got them.
According to Shorto, New Yorkers' love for both personal liberty and the marketplace eventually became a defining part of America's character, too.
By the 19th century, when the great waves of immigrants came from Europe, they came by and large into New York. They land in its streets. They see this mix of peoples, this polyglot society, this struggling to get ahead. And of course, they call this American. In fact, it wasn't American yet. It was New York, and it was New York because of what New York had been. Many of them stay here, but then others move westward. They go to Ohio, they go all the way to California, and in doing that, they made it American.
Beyond a few enduring place names, Brooklyn, Harlem, the Bowery, one can easily overlook New York's rich Dutch heritage. However, one still senses the Nederlander spirit in the Big Apple's icons of commerce, like Wall Street, and its monuments to opportunity and freedom, like Ellis Island and the Statue of Liberty. But perhaps most important, author Russell Shorto writes in The Island at the Center of the World, one sees the extraordinary diversity that continues to thrive in New York. In that sense, there's a whiff of old Amsterdam in every Hispanic bodega, every Chinese restaurant, every Hasidic synagogue, and every African yam stall on Manhattan Island. This is Adam Phillips, VOA News, New York.